Hello and welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm your host, Rajini Gamage, a postdoctoral fellow at the Institute. So the Elections Commission of Sri Lanka has stated that a presidential election is likely to be held between September 18 and October 18 this year. This is the first election to be held after the 2022 mass people's protests, which caused the Rajapaksa leadership at the time to step down from power. There are multiple political groups and factions that are taking form presently in the lead-up to elections. And in addition, the government faces the uphill task of managing the prevailing economic crisis conditions. So in this context, an assessment of the state of democracy and legitimacy of democratic institutions and processes in Sri Lanka is valuable. For example, how much of public trust and legitimacy do democratic institutions and processes hold in Sri Lanka at the present moment? And to understand some of these issues, we are joined today by a researcher and attorney at law at the Center for Policy Alternatives from Colombo, Ms. Bhavani Fonseca. Ms. Fonseca is a prominent constitutional and human rights lawyer and advocate in Sri Lanka. So thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Rajni.
Right. So to get started off, I think that it would be good for the listeners to get a broad sense of the state of democracy in Sri Lanka at present. How would you describe the current trajectory of democracy in Sri Lanka, especially, as I mentioned, after the 2022 Aragale that happened?
Well, Rajni, I think it's very important to look at Sri Lanka's recent history when we talk about democracy. We are in the backdrop of the economic crisis and this unprecedented citizen mobilization, which I think really caught the attention of the global community. But it is also a country that has seen cycles of violence, a near three-decade war. We've also seen post-war challenges. We've had the Easter Sunday attacks and really issues that have gone to the heart of Sri Lanka's democracy, governance, reconciliation, and human rights. And the Aragale, which saw tens and thousands of people peacefully coming to the streets, also speak to decades of citizen mobilization, where people have, for different reasons, got to the streets to really fight for democracy, fight for the rule of law in Sri Lanka. And that history needs to be kept in mind when we talk about the present situation and the challenges. So Sri Lanka has a history in terms of fighting for our institutions and democratic processes. This year, I think, is quite unprecedented because, as you also said, this is the first national election that is to be held. And if it is held, it'll be the first one where people can go and freely, hopefully freely and fair, choose the elected representatives. But there is a big but here. We also saw elections postponed last year. In 2023, the local government elections were meant to be held, and the president and the government claimed they didn't have the money, the funds to hold elections. So that was a very alarming sign in terms of one of these key indicators of democracy being held hostage by the executive. And we challenged it in the Supreme Court, and we can go into it. But the fact is that I think Sri Lanka's democracy is extremely fragile. And I think this is something to watch this year, in a key year where elections are to be held, how it'll play out in the next couple of months.
I think since you mentioned elections, it would be good to dive a bit deeper into that. As you mentioned, there are several layers to this. On the one hand, that there is a degree of doubt on the part of the public whether elections would be held. We also know that since this is the first elections that is held after the people's protests, there is a sense of pent-up public frustration and anger as well. And so there's also this rhetoric that the elections are the place where the people will perhaps express that anger. And so my question is, partly relates to how much of public trust there is that elections will actually bring about the change that they want to see.
Well, I think this is one thing that will have to be seen whether we actually go through that process of elections. As you said at the very outset, the Election Commission has announced that the election, that process will commence in around July, August. And so if things stay the course, if it's free and fair, elections should happen. And Sri Lanka has a history of citizens coming out in large numbers and voting, even during the war and difficult periods. So I think regardless, there will be people wanting to exercise their franchise and be part of this very important process. The question really is whether there will be an opportunity and whether it will be free and fair. So these are the big questions. The other one is really, what are the choices people will have? Who are the candidates? What are the issues they will be bringing to the fore? And we are now seeing some noise being made in terms of promises, but still very early days in terms of what is in store, what the candidates bring to the fore, and we'll have to see all of this. But I think in terms of voters and the citizen engaging with the process, if it's free and fair and going by Sri Lanka's history, there will be huge interest and engagement from the citizen.
And so elections are one of the big democratic pillars. As you mentioned, in Sri Lanka, there's a history of people very actively engaging, very high voter turnouts. I suppose it's a good place for us to then talk about some of the other key pillars of democracy when we talk about it. So the executive, the parliament, the judiciary, for example. So we also know that the Center for Policy Alternatives has recently published a survey. And in terms of public trust in certain institutions in Sri Lanka. So could you give us a sense of what the state of public trust is in democratic institutions and key state actors?
So again, I think it's very important to look at what happened in recent years. And the survey we did, also there's a bigger study where we compared previous surveys as well. And I think that's also good reading in terms of how perceptions have changed, why it changed. Overall, there's a general sense democracy is what works. People believe in democracy, so that's a good indicator. Majority feel democracy is the way to go. But if you then look at the data, what comes out is also very interesting in terms of trust levels in institutions or lack of trust in some institutions. And the military, the courts and the police are they receive the highest number in terms of trust in institutions, as opposed to parliament and political parties. But that, I think, also speaks to what we saw in the recent years in terms of Dharagale. Many who came to the streets protested in terms of needing a change, a system change, a change in governance. And that system change really meant they wanted to see a new, a fresh start, to have political accountability, to have key reforms. And one of the key reforms was abolishing the executive presidency. And again, another survey that was done late last year, also showed that levels of people believing there needs to be a change in the structure of the government and the state meant abolishing the executive presidency. So really, I think through the surveys, one can see is that trust levels on key institutions are very low, and that reform agenda and changing the structure of the state requires attention. That abolishing the executive presidency, which was reflected in Dharagale in 2022, still stands. And that's linked to also allegations of corruption and requiring transparency, accountability. So again, people are voicing their opinions. Whether they are able to voice it in an election and choose the right candidate to take it through is to be seen.
Right. I think that's really interesting, especially, I mean, now that you raised this issue about abolishing the executive presidency, if that is featuring so high in what public opinion is, it's quite interesting to then watch what some of the major political campaigns are talking about. And maybe you are closer to this than I am, but I haven't been noticing this agenda of abolition, the executive presidency hitting very high or even at all on some of these political platforms, whereas it might have featured more strongly in some of our past election cycles.
Yes, and I think if you look at the promises made by all the parties in the past, every candidate did promise to abolish the executive presidency. And the closest we got was reforming and bringing constitution amendments to reduce the power of the executive presidency. So really, from the calls and the demands of the people, what was delivered was very, very different. And I think the Aragale in that sense was the first time people took to the streets peacefully saying, enough of these promises, we need to see real change. And I think it's also important to look at the constitutional amendments that came about because of these promises by the various successive governments. You see a ping pong in that constitution reform process. There's been moments where there's constitutional amendments that attempted to reduce the power of the executive presidency and bring in checks and balances by means of introducing the Constitutional Council. But very soon after these amendments, you see the opposite happening where you consolidate and provide greater powers to the executive presidency. So that's why it's ping-pong in that you have one that takes away certain powers, another that gives back the powers. And so we've had this thing about promises being made, never really fully implemented, and then people still calling for that change. Yeah. And this year, in a way, and also 15 years after the war ended, really, is this the moment Sri Lanka really goes through that transformation needs to be seen.
Right. I'm sorry to keep kind of circling around this issue of abolishing the executive presidency. It does relate very strongly to the issue I want to raise after I raise this point, which is on reforms. But it just strikes me, as you say, as you're speaking, that if the Aragale raised something as pertinent as abolishing the executive presidency, but if it is not featuring in the current political campaigns, I'm wondering if this to some extent, I don't know if this is a leading question, if this to some extent hints at the, so we talk a lot about public trust, but I'm also wondering at the extent of political legitimacy or the gap between the people and the political leaders and groups and parties that exists at present. Just to get a sense of that, because as an outsider, sometimes I would have expected after such a widespread mass protests that some of the key demands of the protesters would be featuring very heavily in the current political campaigns. And to find the absence of this, do you think that's a result of a gap between the political actors and the say people? Or do you think that in post-economic crisis, or actually in the middle of an economic crisis, so in moments of such heightened economic crisis, would you think that that's a outcome of that?
So I think it's a mixed answer, because you see certain parties trying to reflect the demands of the protests. And the party that is seems to be at the present moment, at least the most popular, the NPP, is speaking to some of these reforms. Now, again, whether they have a proper plan, whether it's implemented, all of this is to be seen. It's very early days. Whereas the others, including the president's party, the UNP, and the SLPP, which is the Rajapaksa party, you're not seeing much out-of-the-box thinking. They speak to the same messages. And in that sense, the popularity also needs to be questioned. But again, it's very early days, Rajni. I think that's the important thing. Elections haven't been called yet. This is very much speaking to the public, a public that is curious, a public that hasn't been able to vote and really voice in a democratic way what they want. So I think some clever politicians are hearing the people's voices and the demands and trying to connect it to some of the things that came around during the Aragale in 2022. But again, there is also the criticism whether much of this is to appease certain actors, appease certain sections of society, appease the elites. So these also need to be looked at in that sense. So I would say it's very early days. It's very dynamic in a way at the moment. But when elections are called, I hope when, it's not if, when, then it's to be seen what are the manifestos that will reflect these demands, whether it will reflect, what will the candidates say in an election time. There's also this talk about some of the candidates having a debate. Now, this is also an interesting time, you know, whether some of these opposition leaders will get into a debate, whether the public is able to engage in these debates, you know. So these are things we've never seen before so early on in an election year. And if these processes happen and people are able to engage, that would also be a time where the individual, the citizen, is able to put pressure on the parties, on the politicians, and question them. So again, new times, interesting times, and one can only hope that the elections are held in a free and fair manner.
Right. Yes, I mean, I completely agree that we haven't entered the more volatile part, like you say, if and when elections will be called for. And like you said, it's very interesting, it would be very interesting to watch what different political parties or political campaigns are saying at the moment, and what will feature in the manifestos going forward. And I'm saying this with the idea that, of course, many of them would respond to the demands of various stakeholders, like you mentioned, different groups of society, some external partners. And in doing so, we get a sense that we'll have to keep an eye out for which reforms get prioritized over the others. Is it the case that during an economic crisis, economic reforms get prioritized over constitutional or political, other sorts of governance reforms? And so with that, I think I would like to ask you what insights you have to share in terms of the reforms program that the Vikramasinghe government has been rolling out since July 2022. There have been many reforms, as we know, but we would like to get some sense of prognosis or even some examples of these reforms, the ways in which they were prioritized, the ways in which they were passed, and what their impact on democracy is.
So in that, I think that it's important to then keep in mind President Vikramasinghe was elected president by parliament, and there is this question of, does he really have the mandate of the people? And people's demands were very, very vocal at that time and continue to be vocal in terms of reforms that really go to the heart of the problem in terms of accountability, in terms of addressing corruption, in terms of abolishing the executive presidency, the whole issue of asset declarations, all of that. So people are very clear that needs to happen, and elections should be held as well. Now, since 2022, with the Aragale and the government, the change of the president, what we've seen is very, very worrying reforms that were introduced in terms of the rule of law, in terms of governance, democracy, human rights. We had the Online Safety Act that was passed, extremely problematic process, rushed through, and in terms of even what it represents for freedom of expression. And then we now have in Parliament the proposed Anti-Terror Act, which all and many other laws and proposed laws that's really shows a very insecure government that is trying to stifle people's voices. And it also raises questions whether the government is worried that there'll be a similar uprising by the people if elections are not held, and if their demands are not met, and whether these are ways to stifle any form of protest, any form of critique of the government. So the direction of some of these reforms is extremely worrying in terms of civil liberties and fundamental freedoms. The the one thing the government is trying to say is this is an economic recovery phase. So economic reforms need to get priority. And that was the reason given in terms of postponing elections, that they don't have the money. And there is already a narrative picking up that, you know, for economic recovery, we, you know, the government can't be distracted by other issues. And this notion that you set aside democracy at the cost of economic recovery. So very worrying in terms of that narrative, that you choose what is convenient for the government and what's convenient for the executive. And that's why it's so important for the citizen, for civil society, for media, to really be very vigilant at this moment to ensure that democracy is protected and we fight for that. And one positive thing with the Aragalia is that people are becoming much more vocal in terms of the reform agenda. They're being more vocal in terms of challenging the government. So with the Online Safety Act, we saw many come to court. With the proposed Anti-Terror Act, we saw many come to court. So people are also not being silent. So it's very interesting what the government is planning to do, whether economic issues will take precedence over constitutional and democratic processes, or whether they, you know, all are possible. And we say it shouldn't be either or. It should be economic recovery plus holding elections and having the democratic space and open society that we should be having. So again, to be seen how things play out in 2024 and 2025, because I think we need to also keep in mind parliamentary elections could also happen. And these are two big elections that need to be kept in mind. But also the fact that local government elections were never held last year and provincial council elections have been postponed as well. So really, Sri Lanka haven't had elections in several years. And that's quite worrying.
I think that I will probably end with one more final question. Leading off, I think you kind of really captured the current state of especially the reforms. And like you said, how sometimes this narrative of we being in an economic crisis being used to legitimize or at least rationalize certain democratic freedoms being sidelined. So I think that was very articulately put through. And from there, to finally ask you in terms of this sense of civic space, how much of a civic space there is, because I'm, from what you're saying, I'm getting the sense on the one hand that the civic space is shrinking to some extent because of certain repressive laws like the Online Safety Act and the Anti-Terrorism Act, and some of the ways in which protests have been put down over the past couple of years. But then I'm also getting this a sense of hope that people are engaging with the reforms discourse at a higher level. They are engaging with the legal system to some extent. So I did want to get a sense, an overall sense of yours, as to what the civic space is like.
So again, I would say Sri Lanka, civic space-wise, it's a very dynamic civil society, media, and the citizen on the whole. And I would say one of the positive things in a very volatile, uncertain time is that you can expect the citizen and sections of society to be very, very active. And the Online Safety Act, that experience and the challenges in court, but also the public debates, the discussion gave one hope that all is not lost. Now, that said, we would have to see how many things are brought to the fore which possibly could distract the citizen. Potential laws that could further restrict rights. The proposed Anti-Terror Act is one example. There are others such as the proposed Broadcasting Authority Bill. There is a proposed law to try to restrict civil society and NGOs. So there's various proposals out there. But what is also important is that the judiciary also has heard the people. They've also pushed back to some extent on some of these laws and questioned the executive. So authoritarian tendencies have also been coming under check because of these institutions, but also the citizens. So it gives you hope that if there are attempts to delay, if there are attempts to undermine elections and undermine democratic processes, the citizen who came to the streets in 2022 won't be silent. And one can only hope that the fight to protect democracy is a peaceful one and it doesn't become violent. That's the only hope.
So thank you, Bhavani, for joining us today. That was a very insightful conversation. You are listening to South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, please visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg. You can also get updates through social media. We are on X, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Thank you.